Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that the fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to The Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome into another episode of The Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, brought to you by RotoBaller. This is episode 320. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross. And with me, as usual, is my 80 gray co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, how's it going, bud?
It's another day in paradise. Cannot complain. So if you're listening to this, it's July 4th. So happy 4th of July. If you're in the United States and enjoying the day off of work, it's for most of you at least. But yeah, it's good to be back talking ball. We've got a lot of players to discuss this episode. So looking forward to breaking it all down.
Yeah, happy 4th of July to everybody, and hope you have a great and safe 4th of July. Don't be getting any firecracker injuries out there. We don't need that. But yeah, we do have a lot of fun players to talk about. We put out a tweet yesterday from the Toolshed account on Twitter asking just who are some players you're just having a tough time figuring out what to do with now, whether it's guys you're debating dropping or guys you're just having a hard time valuing, potential keepers, whatever the reason. We got a lot of great responses. I think it was something like 65 or so total players mentioned. So obviously we can't go through every one of these or it'd be a 4 or 5 hour podcast, but we'll hit on the ones that were mentioned multiple times. We sorted it out by the most frequently mentioned players and we'll hit on as many as we can. Any of the other ones that are mentioned once we might have a strong feeling about one way or another, but yeah, a lot of intriguing names here. So looking forward to it. Before we get into all of that, though, the usual housekeeping. You can find us on Twitter. Chris is at RotoClegg. I'm at EricCross04. Show is at ToolshedPod. If you enjoy the podcast, please rate and review. Make sure you check out both of our personal platforms, thedynastydugout.com and toolshedfantasy.com for more work from each of us. And, of course, check out all the great work going on over at RotoBaller. Use the code TOOLSHED at checkout. Get you 10% off any premium package over at RotoBaller.com. Obviously, baseball is still very much in full swing over at RotoBaller. Got a lot of basketball content. Football obviously is kicking off here and getting ramped up for all you fantasy football people, but still plenty of baseball too. So check all that out over at RotoBaller.com. And we'll start out here with the most frequently mentioned player in reply to that tweet with 5 mentions. And that's Jordan Walker. Not really that surprised that he was mentioned a lot there. And as someone that people that know me know that I've been a pretty big Jordan Walker guy for a while now, but this year has been pretty rough, to say the least. Obviously, didn't fare well with St. Louis in April, was sent down, and he's been pretty, I don't want to say mediocre, but pretty meh. I know that's not a great word to use, but I think that accurately describes how he's been so far in AAA. You look at 70 games with AAA Memphis, 289 plate appearances, slashing 225, 287, 359, only 4 home runs, all of which came in the month of June. So that was great to see the power stroke start to appear in June, but then he only hit 242 with a 310 OBP. So pretty mixed bag, more down than up with Jordan Walker, a guy that was one of the top prospects in all of baseball, plenty of power, obviously hit it on the ground way too much. Where are you at with Walker now, Chris? Like, you still holding out hope that he can maybe correct these issues? I think the raw tools obviously are still there, and when we see those every now and then, but very inconsistently at that. So I don't know. I'm still holding out hope a little bit, but I've been fading him more and more in my rankings. He can't be top 100 dynasty anymore. Maybe 150 to 200 range, I think, is fair at this point. But I guess I'm seeing something from him soon, because these issues that he has just have not gotten better, and that's concerning to me.
Yeah, I think it's certainly concerning when you look at everything that he's done, the full body of work. And yeah, I think first off, he was a little bit rushed last year. They threw him in the fire. He was 20 years old when he debuted. So that's pretty young to step in the majors, and few can step in the majors and succeed at 20. I also don't think that it's helped him that he's playing right field. Honestly, like, he's just not an outfielder. I think that is also an issue. Like, in the process of all this, they moved him from third to the outfield. Is he a designated hitter? Maybe, but he's got to hit better to be a designated hitter. And I just look at the aspect of him having to worry about right field too. And it, I think, is probably affecting all aspects of his game right now. And it's showing at the plate. Like, he's been, you know, quite bad in AAA. And you would expect that this kind of profile would step in and do extremely well against AAA pitching, because, you know, AAA pitching has not been great at all, if we're being honest. And if you look back over the last month, like, things just have been even worse, which is crazy to say, but he's hitting just 222 with a sub 300 OBP over the last month, when he should really be picking it up a bit. He has four home runs. He's still hitting the ball hard, which is, you know, interesting to look at. The exit velocity is still plus 91.5 average EV, a near 107 mile an hour 90. So those are really good marks. Like, those are signs of a plus power hitter. And the contact skills themselves have been pretty solid too, all things considered. You look at 77% overall, 87% end zone. Those are good marks. But yet there's something that's just a bit off, it seems, with Walker right now. Obviously, he's not getting the production at all. I feel like he's probably a lot in his own head, and that would make sense. He's still hitting the ball on the ground too much. He's not hitting healthy fly balls. The home run to fly ball rate is way down. So yeah, it's just really tough to look at Jordan Walker and find too many positives. He's been hyper aggressive and chasing a ton, which, you know, hasn't helped him at all. I think he's pressing, trying to get back on track, and it's hurt him in a sense. So yeah, I'm with you. I've got him outside the top 200 for Dynasty. I'm not really sure where the ship goes from here and how does he write it. I think that's going to be a big question mark that needs to be answered. And I think we need to see something soon. Like, we need to see maybe a second half turnaround. And maybe it's going to the dev list and just working on a couple of things, couple of swing changes. And I'm not saying that's the case, that's going to happen, but we do need to see something pretty soon from Jordan Walker.
Yeah, and I'm not sure it'll be this year. Sometimes that's hard to do in season, you know, without, like you mentioned, some time off and a trip to the dev list to really work on things. So maybe this is something he can work on in the offseason, and maybe you can see a bounce back next year in 2025. But yeah, I'm not out on Walker by any means. It'd be way too early to do that, given the, you know, the raw upside that he does have. But yeah, it's not someone I can rank that highly anymore. Next guy here, guy that was coming off back-to-back years of at least 18 home runs and 20 steals in his first 2 years with the Braves. That's Michael Harris the second. This year, been, you know, another mixed bag. You look at the profile, some good, some bad. But overall, slash line, a very underwhelming 250, 295, 358, five home runs, eight steals in 278 plate appearances. You know, kind of one of a few Atlanta Braves that have been struggling this year. Matt Olson's been down a bit. Austin Riley's been down a bit. Hank Harris was a guy that was pushing, getting near the top tier of fantasy outfielders, and someone I thought could take that next step this year, maybe go 25 plus. The upside was there. He showed that the last couple of years and was actually on that pace in each year because he only had 441 plate appearances in 2022 and 539 last year. But that just has not been the case this year, and he's taken a step back in several areas. So, Chris, being the Atlanta Braves fan here, what have you been seeing from Michael Harris? You know, do you think he can turn it back around here this year? What are your thoughts on where he should be valued right now?
Harris is a really tough one. He went through that spell early last year where he struggled really bad and he was injured. And I think that played a big part. Obviously, he's out with a hamstring strain right now, so that hasn't helped him either. But looking at this profile, I think that Harris still has all the skills that you want to see. The concerning aspects are that he's hitting the ball on the ground more, and the ground ball rate was already pretty high. So you don't like to see that. He was taking a few more walks, so that rate was a touch higher, not a ton higher, but the barrel rate had basically been slashed in half. He was at 10% the first two seasons of his career, and this year it's at 6%. So that's a cut pretty significantly. But I still believe that Michael Harris can get back on track and that he's going to be fine in the long term. I like that he's been pulling the ball a little bit more this year. That's super helpful as long as we can pull and get some lift with it. And his home run to fly ball rate will normalize. It's much lower than it has been for most of his career. That begs the question then, where does Michael Harris fit in dynasty rankings? And I don't have a good answer to that. At one point, he was a top 25 guy because we were looking at somebody that had shown signs of being a 25-25 type, 25 homer, 25 stolen base type hitter with a good average. Can Harris get back to that? Yeah, I believe so. I think that the entirety of the Braves team is struggling right now. The mojo seems off a bit. So I think Harris will be fine long-term when he comes back from injury, given that the hamstring will be okay. And yeah, I certainly believe that they're not going to rush him, I don't think. And I think that by season's end, we probably look back and say, all right, yeah, it's a rough first half, but he ended up being okay. Now it's just a question of what does that look like long term? And I think that if you can weather this year, then you hold on and hope that Harris bounces back. Because I do believe in this profile long term.
Yeah, so do I. And I think I'm one of the higher rankers on him now is when I put out my June update and I posted top 100 of that to Roto Baller. I had some comments, people like, oh, why do you still have Harris this high? Or why do you have Harris over this guy? Because I believe in the player that we saw the last 2 years. I don't know what's going on in Atlanta this year, Chris. I don't know if you have a good answer for that. Maybe did they make a little deal with the devil last year for that ridiculous offense they had. Now they're paying the price for it this year. I don't know, but definitely something's gone wrong this year in Atlanta, outside of Marcelo Ozuna pretty much, but I don't think what we saw from Harris the last 2 years is a fluke. He was very consistent. Good strikeout rate. Didn't walk a lot, but quality of contact metrics were above average. 10% barrel, 45, 48% hard hit rate. Obviously a good athlete, solid sprint speed, and had decent contact skills as well. And those are still there. There hasn't been any real big drop-offs there. Yeah, the chase rate's high and even higher than usual this year. Whiff rate's still decent. Contact rates are still solid. So there hasn't been any massive drop-offs in any metric that you're like, oh, hey, that's the reason why. But, yeah, that's why I'm willing to buy low. I think he still could be a top 25 talent. Hopefully when he gets back healthy, he can get it going here. And the same for this next guy. These Harris and then this guy were the two guys mentioned four times in reply to that tweet. And that's Junior Caminero with the Tampa Bay Rays. I don't think there's any question about the talent. Everyone knows Junior Caminero is one of the best power hitters in all of baseball, regardless of level. And he's shown that this year. He's got 8 home runs in 34 games for AAA Durham, but he's only played 34 games. He missed some time early, right off the bat this season with, I believe it was a hamstring strain. And now he's missed the last month or a little over that with a quad strain. So you got to wonder, is lower body leg issues going to be a recurring theme here? Hopefully not. This is the guy that hit 324 last year with 31 home runs in 117 games between high and double A's. Is this almost like a Royce Lewis thing where it's a massive talent that's going to be held back by injuries? So at this point, are these starting to concern you about his durability moving forward?
Yeah, I think that's a genuine question at this point with him. Is we've seen the struggles with injuries, and it's that quads bothered him a couple times, and I think he had to be a little bit concerned. You know, it's at this point he's been out for over a month, and it's a 4 to 6 week type injury, but we'd like to see him back in uniform, obviously, and performing. But so far, he hasn't been on the field to earn that promotion. And obviously, you look and say, yeah, he was good enough early in the year to have earned the promotion. He missed some time in early April, and then he was really good for a stretch. And he had the cover off the ball, the contact skills look good. Everything still looks good with Junior Caminero. It's just, is this the kind of guy that's going to continually have lower body injuries? And you hope not. Like, it would be terrible if his career was derailed by consistent injury, issue. But right now, we do need to see him healthy and on the field because the talent's still there. There's just no denying the talent at all. It's just, can he overcome this and get back to where he needs to be?
Yeah. I love Caminero. The power is just so massive. And you think 35, 40 home runs is possible over a full season. But you could say that about Royce Lewis as well. And obviously Lewis is on the IL again right now, which is just sucks. No better way to put that. It just sucks. But yeah, Caminero, I'm not going to drop. He's still a top five prospect. He's still a top 50 overall dynasty for me. But I'd be lying if I said I wasn't at least a little bit concerned right now about his durability moving forward. That's the sneaky, not talked about sixth tool that doesn't really get discussed as much as it probably should, because that can limit players just as much as poor approach can limit players. All right, next up here, those are the two that had four mentions. We have four players that are mentioned three times, starting with Mikel Garcia, who was probably one of the trendier players this spring, whether it be talking about redraft as a breakout. I'm using air quotes right now, you can't see it, but or even dynasty as a player to the target. And I think we're both on that train here on this show as well. And on one hand, you look at his stats this year, and he's already got one more home run than last year. He had four in 515 player appearances last year with 23 steals. He's already at 5 and 21 respectively in 135 fewer plate appearances this year, so that's good. But at the same time, went from 272 last year with a 323 OBP to 229 this year. Barrel rate is still low, even though he's hitting the ball pretty hard. Still has an EV over 90, hard hit rate about 44%, but that ground ball rate is still around 50% overall, which is limiting him. But I think he's a good buy right now, because even though the average has dropped, the contact skills have actually gotten better this year compared to last year. Zone contact went from 84 to 87.9%. Overall, from 80.5 to 83.4. Those are both very good. Chase rate is still better than league average as well. Just this main issue just continues to be the higher ground ball rates, which is really limiting. The barrel rate's been staying low. But I don't think any of us thought that he was going to be like a 25 homer guy, but I still think like a 15 homer guy is in there. It might take a swing change, but so maybe that power doesn't come this year. Maybe it never comes. Who knows? We thought it'd come this year, and it hasn't really. Though he might get up to 8 or 9 this year, but that 229 average I think is going to turn around here, because like I mentioned, he's actually gotten better in a lot of those metrics. The K rate's dropped 6% down to 16.3, so a lot of good in the profile. So I'm still fairly high on Garcia. I like him. And I think he's a good buy right now in Dynasty League. So what are your thoughts, Chris?
My biggest question is, how long can he stay in the lineup with a 619 OPS? It's really bad. And, among all qualified hitters, I'm going to look and see like exactly where that falls. But I have to guess that's towards the bottom of that group. Yeah,
it's got to be like bottom five.
Yeah, it's an interesting list down at the bottom here when we look at it. Because actually, there's some big names below him. Julio Rodriguez, Corbin Carroll, Bo Bichette. That's very bad. Garcia's the 10th worst OPS among qualified. So Jeff McNeil being the worst at 572. Yeah, obviously the Royals don't have anybody pressing right now to take that spot. And I think that Garcia does provide in some ways that benefits the team. But I do wonder, how long is this, you know, experiment last with Garcia, because he does steal bases, but to a major league team, it's not as valuable as it would be to us in fantasy sense. He obviously does a lot of things, like you mentioned. He does make good contact. The contact skills look good, but the quality of contact's just not there. He's always hit the ball hard, but you just hit the ball on the ground, and that's an issue in of itself. And he doesn't really get to the pull side like you'd like to see. Lifting and pulling the ball, yeah, he doesn't do it. So do I think that there's more in the tank? Yeah, I believe that. And I think that better days have to be ahead. But you look at it right now and you say, okay, 229 average, 281 OBP, that's not helping anybody. It's not helping the Royals at all. And I think that's a little bit concerning to me, is at some point, there's going to be someone come along, and at that point, could he lose the spot? Maybe. I don't think that Garcia right now is doing anything to lock himself in long-term to this team. And yeah, I think that there's that potential that he could, maybe if things don't get better, I'm not saying right now, but he could be out. We'll see. Like I said, it's the Royals. There's nobody pressing right now for that spot. He can play second or third. That's a benefit too. But yeah, I think it's something to watch for, just given the fact that he has not been all that great. I do think the cost probably has dipped enough where if you believe that he can turn it around, then maybe it's a good time to buy him and see where it goes.
Man, you basically just described my thoughts on like Key Brian Hayes.
Yeah, not that much different.
No, he has a ground ball issue, but hits the ball hard, plays solid defense at third. How much longer does Pittsburgh stick with it? I think these two are actually pretty, not a direct comp, but what they're going through in their career path right now has been fairly similar, pretty close. But yeah, it's, I think the value has dipped enough though that he might be a decent buy, but I wouldn't be like running out there to get Michael Garcia by any means. Next one here with three mentions, Henry Davis, another trendy preseason draft pick. He was hitting the ball really hard this year, gained a lot of bat speed, had a really big spring training and catcher eligibility. Everyone was, that was like the trendy pick. Oh, let's go out and get Henry Davis. Yeah, that hasn't worked so far this year. In 102 plate appearances with Pittsburgh, 153, 267, 235 slash line, and one home run. Chris, do you think that was just, I don't know, fool's gold this spring, that big spring, all the reports of the added bat speed from offseason workouts? He's been hurt as well and not playing well at really any level, even when he was down in the – he hit well in the minor leagues when he went back down, but it's been – every stint with Pittsburgh this year has been pretty poor and not a lot of encouraging metrics under the hood either. Quality of contact's not been great. Strikeout rate is insanely high right now. I don't know. Do you see anything positive here that you're still willing to hold out hope or maybe even buy low in Dynasty?
I think that this is the perfect lesson to take spring training with a minuscule grain of salt and not care about any performance in spring training because look at the top spring training performers year over year, and yeah, it doesn't really mean a whole lot. You see this with Davis, we saw this with Cabrian Hayes. I don't know, I keep wanting to give Henry Davis a chance because he does things. It's okay, here's the flashes, but then he never turns into performance. You mentioned there's been some health issues as well, hasn't been fully healthy. He's been horrific for pretty much his entire major league career. And even in the minors, there's still some questions where it's like, all right, we need to see a little bit more. Obviously, he mashed this year in AAA, but when you come up and you hit like he has, it really makes me wonder, like, why is this? Is it a confidence thing? And for a lot of people, it is. I think that it's just, there's a lot of players that, you know, don't have the confidence. Every player is good if you're in AAA or the majors. Once you get that level, you're good. Everybody there is really good. Right. But what separates a lot of people is the ability to have the mental state that they need to compete at the major league level. And even with Henry Davis's dominance in AAA, you look, 64% contact, that's very bad, and 77% in zone is well below average. Think that the AAA numbers look a bit like fool's gold. He's slashing 296, 436, 642. But the contact skills don't support that at all. And obviously you see the results in the major leagues, and the contact rates are pretty much right in line with what he did in AAA. So hit the ball hard all you want, but if you can't make contact with the ball, it doesn't really matter, in my opinion. So he's got to figure out the contact issues if Henry Davis wants to be an everyday major leaguer.
Yeah, because a 70.7% zone is just not going to cut it. If that was 70% overall contact, still not great, but you could cut it with that. But yeah, a lot of poor metrics here that don't give me a lot of hope. But the price is so low right now. If you have him, you can hold on to him. Unless it's, you know, more of a shallow league, then you might have to cut him, or you probably already have it in a shallow league. But I don't know. I was never super high on Davis before. I did drink the Kool-Aid this spring, but yeah, not a lot to hang your hat on right now with Henry Davis. Next one here, Colton Cowser, very polarizing player because the metrics are he's either very good in that particular metric or very bad. And the bad ones, unfortunately, are pretty important ones. He's got a higher K rate. It's not insanely high, but 28.6%. But at the same time, he's at 76% zone contact, 68.3% overall contact. But then the good, he's at 12 home runs, 5 steals so far, with a 228, 312, 443 slash line. Quality of contact with Colton Cowser is very good. He hits the ball really hard. And quick shout out to Eric Garfield. People that follow the Baltimore Orioles know that he's Orioles guy and sees these guys down in the lowest levels of the minor leagues. And he was like really one of the first ones I saw that was like, yeah, the power's legit and it's being undersold. And yeah, that's being proven right now. 15.4% barrel rate, 91.5 average EV, and a 49.7% hard hit rate. But do you think, is this kind of what Cowser is, Chris? Do you think he's going to be a guy that's the contact skills keep the average lower? Maybe he's more of a 230, 240 guy, but one that could go 25 plus home runs and around 10 steals annually. Do you think that's what he is? Or do you think there's that next level to be unlocked where he's maybe a top 15 or so outfielder moving forward?
I don't want to say that he is what he is at this point at 24. There's a lot of streakiness in the bat, and I think that you can see it in the game logs. It's a lot of ups and downs. He's going to go through stretches where it's really bad, and he's going to go through some stretches where it's really good. And the month of April was one of those months where it was really good. / 297, 369, 622 with 6 home runs and 6 doubles. And then he just flounders the next month, hits 188 with a 275 slug. That's horrific. And then in June, it was a little bit more power, but still some struggles with contact and the ability to hit for average and get on base. Maybe July will be better. He's off to a good start so far in July, but it's a small sample, obviously, at this point. But yeah, you're right. I think that Cowser, he's got to figure out the contact skills. I think that's the number one thing because he checks a lot of boxes as far as quality of contact. That's not a worry for me at all. But I am more worried about him actually making contact. This profile reminds me a little bit of like Nolan Jones, where you struggle to make contact and you can get on base. You don't chase all that much, but we know the volatility in a Nolan Jones. So I worry about that with Cowser. I do think that he has the intangibles. He's got to make contact.
Yeah. And can he get that contact? I think he can get that. I mean, he showed a little bit better contact in the minors, not like great contact skills by any means, but can he hit 250? Yeah, I think that's still, you know, in the realm of possibility, especially given the hard contact that he does make. So I won't rule that out. So maybe the next level to be had, but yeah, I don't think he's going to hit like 270, 280 or anything like that either. Last name here that's mentioned 3 times, Miguel Vargas, who I think both Chris and I have been pretty high on Vargas, especially back in his prospect days. I don't know if we ever ranked him top 10 overall, but probably both put him pretty close to that at one point, at least in the teens. But has been very up and down, both in terms of production, up and down from AAA to the majors. Two positional changes, going from third to second, and now he's just only playing left field. Where does he fit in the long-term picture with the Dodgers, who currently are running out Teoscar Hernandez, Andy Páez, and Jason Hayward regularly, and they still have several others that can play in the outfield as well. So he's on the roster right now, but has not started in a while. It has not started in the last week. He's not really playing much at all right now. I don't know. Apparently second base is that thing is over because Gavin Lux has been starting at second base and he's been very mediocre this year. So that speaks volumes that they don't even want to try that experiment again and put him in there over Lux. I don't know. Like, he's been hitting well when he has had a chance to play. He's like 39 play appearances. He's hitting 324, 385, 529, and was hitting very well in AAA, 290, 440, 566, 14 doubles, 8 home runs, and more walks than strikeouts in 41 games there. So he's been hitting well this season, both AAA and the majors, when he's had a chance to play. But has he fallen out of favor with the Dodgers? Do they maybe they don't think of him as an everyday player? I don't know. In deeper leagues, I'd still hold on to him because the talent's there, but I'm just wondering where he fits with this team long term.
I think it's time for them to trade him. Yep. I really do. I think he needs to move on to a team that will give him everyday run in the majors and let him figure out who he is at the major league level, because I don't think there's anything left to prove for him in AAA at this point. He's consistently hit well there. The underlying data all backs it up. His contact skills can't really get much better. 88% overall, 91 in zone. Those are really good with a 16% chase rate. That's elite combo of skills there. And the fact that this is his third year now in AAA. I don't know what else he needs to do at this point to get consistent time other than not be on the Dodgers, because Vargas checks all the boxes. He's not going to be a big power hitter, but he hits the ball hard enough and he can lift it enough to get to home run power. He's got sneaky speed in the profile, and the contact skills I think are really good. So I think Vargas needs a trade as much as any player in baseball right now to really see who he is and what he can do.
Yeah, I think that could be a really good thing for him. That would get him into a spot where he could play every day and see what he can do. Because, again, he's shown in glimpses what he's capable of. Yeah, like his first year with the Dodgers was very underwhelming, but this year he's back to being the Vargas that we knew and love as a top prospect a couple years ago. Yeah, I would love to see him traded this month. We'll see. It definitely could happen. Dodgers could go out and maybe use him to get some pitching or something, whatever that ends up being. But I'm still in on Vargas right now, and the price is very cheap. So solid dynasty buy. Next up here, going into the players that are mentioned twice. Again, we're not going to be able to get to all these players, but we'll pick out some of the more notable ones or players that we feel strongly about one way or the other. And we'll start with a guy that I thought would be mentioned more than he was. I thought he'd be up there four or five times with Jordan Walker. And that's Spencer Torkelson of the Detroit Tigers, who's been hitting fairly well in AAA since being sent back down almost a month ago at this point. He's got 24 games at the level, 5 doubles, 4 home runs, 271, 360, 448. He's also struck out 33 times in 24 games for a 29.7% strikeout rate. So that strikeout rate is still an issue. Earlier this year with Detroit, it was actually only 24.5%, but he's only hitting 201. Last year, he struck out 25% of the time. So it's gone up since he got sent back down to Toledo. But the thing is, him, he's really struggling against higher velocity. I looked the other day, and he's hitting once with Detroit this year, was hitting 171 with a 207 slug against pitches 95 miles an hour or higher. I mean, this day and age, more and more of those pitches are 95 miles an hour or higher. So that's really concerning overall this year. A lot of blue in the profile. He's only really hitting breaking balls. 280 against breaking balls, but 179 against fastballs, which kind of ties into what I just mentioned with the higher velocity. An off-speed 074 with a 44.4% whiff rate. Torkelson, contact skills, Chris, are still okay. I think both slightly below league average, but not terrible. Ballpark isn't doing him any favors, but I don't know. Where are you at on Tork? Coming off a year, he had 31 home runs, finished last year really strong. But outside of that finish the last year, the rest of his career has been pretty mediocre.
Yeah, he did hit for power last year, but not much else. And he steadily declined as he was coming up the minors. Before his major league debut, he was really good out of the gate. And then as he moved up, it was more struggles. And Tork right now is not hitting the ball hard at all. He's not making good contact. He's showing decent swing decisions. He's not chasing all that much. But I do think that the struggles against fastballs are still quite real here. And it worries me a bit. Like, is Spencer Torkelson going to be able to get back to the level that he needs to be. And I think a lot of it's confidence here, even though that I would say, yeah, last year was good. He had 31 home runs, but still he had a 233 average and a 313 OBP. Like, those aren't all that great. And you'd obviously like to see those improve, but you'll take it with a 31 home run season. This year, it's just the wheels have come off the wagon completely. Yeah, he's not striking out all that much more, but he's just not hitting the ball hard at all. Like, you've seen some major regression as far as exit velocities go, down 3 miles an hour on the average. His barrel rate went from 14% to 4.5%. The launch angles are not nearly as good. The sweet spot rate went way down. There's not a lot of hope here in the profile that I'm seeing, at least. And that's a bit concerning for me with Spencer Torkelson, is that I really need to see something from him and want to see some strides and improvements. And yeah, I know you look at the box scores in AAA and say, all right, it's been pretty decent, but I still think there's question marks. The contact's still been okay. It's below average, 69% overall contact rate. The EVs are still way down in AAA too, which is pretty notable. So I'm more out than in on Torkelson, and I'm not sure I want to take a chance on him.
Yeah, I'm there with you. I was not out in the upper levels of the minors, but I was fading him a little bit then. Didn't think he'd ever hit for a high average, and is hitting 218 with a 296 OBP through his first 1,318 plate appearances. And you look at it, it's funny. I was just doing the math. He had 31 home runs in 684 plate appearances in 2023. 2022 and 2024 combined, 12 home runs in 634 plate appearances. Just very much different there. Yeah, I don't. Is the upside 230 and 30? Like, is that like max for Torkelson? I don't know. There's a lot going wrong here, and yeah, I don't really want to invest either. And I can say the same thing about this next guy, Nolan Jones, coming off a 2020 year. Last year, in just 424 play appearances, hit 297, 389, 542. Man, it was, if you got him like off the, basically anybody that got him, you know, that's not Dynasty Leagues, obviously, but you've had him in a redraft, like, you get him off the waiver wire and got 2020 from him in roughly two-thirds of a season or worth of plate appearances. That was phenomenal. This year, you mentioned wheels falling off the wagon for Torque. I don't know. I think the wagon just got blown up to smithereens here for Nolan Jones. 189, 295, 315, 3 home runs, 3 steals, and 166 plate appearances. He's actually, it's really funny. Look at quality of contact. EV's down a mile an hour, whatever. But the hard hit rate's gone up 7%, but the barrel rate's gone down 10%. Like, you just don't see like that combination of differences very often. But the contact skills are still absolutely terrible. 73.5% in zone. Doesn't chase a lot, doesn't swing a lot either in general. Very low swing rate and first pitch swing rate among the lowest in baseball. But those contact skills and the strikeout rate, that combination. I think last year, you know, I think the power's legit and he's a, you know, sneaky good runner. I think it was his fool's goal last year. I don't remember what his BABIP was last year, but I think it was like pushing 400 most of that season. I think it was just some fool's gold there last year with the average. Is he this bad? No, but I don't know, Chris, like, where do you think he ends up? Like, where's this middle ground? Can he find that middle ground where he can still be a fantasy relevant bat? So I think that's the question a lot of people have right now.
He's going to have to learn to make contact. And that's the reason I was shouting to sell Nolan Jones all offseason, is because the zone contact rate of 71.5% last year was so bad, like some of the worst zone contact rates in the game. And then the overall whiff rates too, overall contact rates is not good at all. And eventually, like, those things catch up to you. Like, Jones had an awesome year statistically last year. He was a league winner. 2020, nearly a 3.45 slash and 424 plate appearances. That'll play all day long. But when you see the red flag, like the contact, shredder get out from under him. And this year, we've certainly seen that regression hit. Despite him hitting the ball harder, his hard hit rate is up from last year 7 percentage points. That's pretty notable. But the average EV is actually down a bit. The barrel rate is a third of what it was last year, which is also concerning. He's hitting the ball on the ground more. He's hitting more pop-ups. It's less healthy fly balls. I'll say, and he's not pulling the ball at all. 27% pull rate has to be one of the lowest rates. MLB averages 37%. Things just aren't working out right now for Nolan Jones. It's probably going to get better. I don't think it can get too much worse right now, but the contact rates are still quite scary here, and I want nothing to do with them if I have the option. And I don't think I have him on any team, so I'm pretty out here.
Yeah, I think I had him on one team, a dynasty team, but I traded him this offseason. So I don't remember what I got for him, but I remember getting rid of him back in like December or something like that. So don't have any shares either. But this next guy I did have a few shares of. Not anymore. My last share I traded away in Highlander about a month ago. And that's Bo Bichette. And he's got one of the lowest, you mentioned the OPS earlier, one of the lowest OPSs on baseball at 609. Overall slash line, 228, 282, 327, four home runs and four steals and 305 plate appearances. So after hitting above 290 the last 2 years at 306 last year, 20 home runs, five steals, he's on pace for eight home runs and eight steals this year with that terrible slash line. The quality of contact has gone down. Hard hit rate's still about the same, but EV's gone down a little bit and the barrel rate's gone down from 9.6%. The last 3 years, he was 9.9, 9.6, 9.6, down to 4.3 this year. Ground ball rate, little high, not like super high though. There's not anything that's like a massive red flag here though, Chris. Like contact rates are still very good with Bo Bichette. 90.6 zone and 79.4 overall. I mean, those are pretty good. That's actually the best overall contact rate of his career. But just the power has just gone by the wayside, and he's not running that much anymore. Sprint speed is 50th percentile, 24 steals this year, only five last year. I think there's a turnaround here in the average department. Is he ever back to a 20 home run guy? That's what I'm questioning. So like, I still have him top 100, but I think Bo Bichette's more back end top 100 right now and in danger of falling out of it pretty soon.
Yeah, he does things well still, which is encouraging as far as the fact that, you know, he is making a lot of contact. I think that's the most important thing. It's really good contact skills still. He is chasing a lot. He's always chased a lot. He's been aggressive. And I think that maybe that's a slight issue, but at the end of the day, like when you're still making 91% end zone contact, you can get away with a little bit of a higher chase rate. So with Bo, I had struggles really identifying like what's the biggest issue here and what's going wrong kind of thing. You're right. I don't think he runs anymore. I think those days are behind him. I think 5 to 10 stolen bases would be the expectation year over year, and 10 being a pretty good year at this point. But where's the power? Because, you know, in the past we had seen him get to home run power. It's declined from 29 homers in 2021 to 24 to 20. And this year we're sitting at four through 306 plate appearances. So we're seeing the drop off even harder, which is substantial. Barrel rate way down. That's obviously the first notable thing, because the more barrels you have, the better chance you have at home runs. And what's weird is you look at it and the batted ball distribution is like nearly identical. It's, you know, from last year to this year, ground ball rate 46.4% to 46.5%. Fly ball rate, 18.8% last year to 18.3% this year. Both are problematic because they're low. But here's the weird one. Line drive rate, 30.9 to 31.3. That should be very conducive to batting average. Like heavy line drive rates, like that's an elite line drive rate, and he's getting no results with it at all. And he doesn't pop up at all. Like his pop-up rate is 3.9%, where the league average is 7. So really good stuff there. Yeah, I think it's just a weird year for Bo. And I'm not saying he's going to rebound. I don't think he's going to rebound and be like a super elite asset by any means. But here's the real struggles is that he can mash fastballs and he really struggles with breaking and off speed. We mentioned those contact rates. The contact rate on fastballs is above 90%. The contact rate on breaking balls sits at a pretty abysmal 66%. And the contact rate against off speed pitches, it's even worse. Like we're looking at 62%. So, you know, there's some issues there. Maybe he's getting exploited a bit. Yeah, he is getting more breaking balls than he did last year. So I think that obviously that's pretty notable and kind of year over year, that rate has increased. So maybe there's a book out on him, but I'd love to see Bo Bichette bounce back because he's a fun player. Maybe he needs a change of scenery at this point, but I think there's major concerns right now.
I wonder if Toronto just blows it up. They're last in the AL East right now. Has not gone well for them. Vlad obviously has bounced back recently. He's having actually a pretty good year. Springer's been pretty bad. Bo has been pretty bad. Gausman's taken a step back. Is he in regression now? Yeah, so it's been a pretty down year for Toronto. So I wonder if they just go blow it up and restock the farm. Because I think even though he's struggled this year, Bo would still give you a pretty good return for prospect package. Maybe a change of scenery is needed here. Who knows? But still have some hope there because, like we both mentioned, there's still some good in the profile as well. But, yeah, I think today's a top 25 Bo might be gone. Next player here, Evan Carter, who had a ton of hype entering the season after what he did down the stretch for Texas and through even all the postseason and the World Series. Last year in 75 play appearances, 5 home runs, 3 steals, and a 306, 413, 645 slash line. But this year, he's been limited to 162 play appearances so far. Currently on the IL with a back injury. Doesn't look like he's going to be back within the next few weeks. Maybe he gets back late July, but probably not until after the All-Star break at the earliest. And only slashing 188, 272, 361 this year. Quality of contact's gone way down. 5.9% barrel, 86 mile an hour average EV, 32.4% hard hit rate. At the same time, the contact skills have gotten better. Zone contact increased from 75.2 to 83.8. Overall contact from 69.8 to 76.6%. So it has been some decent improvements there, but struggling against lefties, Chris, the back issues, which has been more than once issue with the back here. So that's concerning. But he's still only 21 as well. So I don't know. How are you weighing right now these red flags so far that we've seen from Carter with the upside and the durability issues? You know, are you still in? You still think there's a bright future for him? Where are you at?
I think that there are more concerning aspects than the performance, and that's his back.
Yeah.
A 21-year-old having these kind of back issues is majorly concerning for me. Look at Brennan Davis. Brennan Davis was one of the more talented prospects of his time, and he just can't stay healthy. And again, he has another fracture in his back. Like, it's, you know, brutally sad for a player of that talent level. But Carter, he's dealt with a lot of back issues. And I think that's concerning for me is, okay, like, how does this kind of shake out for him? And can he get this under control and ultimately be a productive player? Because he's got all the talent in the world. There's no doubt in my mind that Carter can be a really good asset, but he has a lumbar sprain right now, which is a tear in the ligaments that connect the bones in the lower back. I'm not a doctor. That sounds pretty painful to deal with that, to tear a ligament that connects to your bones in the lower back. I don't know. That doesn't sound too good to me, but I think that I should see Carter healthy, and I wonder if these back issues will be steadily reoccurring. And I'll say that I think that the performance this year probably had a lot to do with the back issues. And he's been dealing with that all year. We saw the upside of him last year as he came up at the end of the year and then made an epic run in the postseason. But I also think this is the downside, that he's hurt and he just can't stay on the field. And it affects his performance. So I think that's the major question mark for me with Evan Carter is, does this back issue linger for well beyond just 2024?
Yeah, you have to be worried about that because backs have a way, especially in baseball, no matter what you do, and you're throwing a ball, running the bases, especially swinging a bat, just the torque that it puts on the back. I think a back injury is very concerning. Just he's only 21 and having these back issues. So I'm still a believer in the tools, and I think we've seen glimpses of those, all of them, getting on base, running, hitting for power, contact skills. It's all there. Maybe hasn't been all been at the same time for the most part, but so I'm still holding a hope for that. But I don't know. If I guess it would depend on the price. It always depends on the price. We can say that about anything, but I don't know. I don't know if I'd want to invest heavily in an Evan Carter. If it's dropped low enough, sure. I'll take a risk on the acquiring the talent he has, and then hoping at the back, fingers crossed, that it holds up after he gets back in a few weeks or whatever it may be. But yeah, it's definitely a lot of red flags there as well. All right, so we're getting near the hour mark of the show, or we just try to keep wrap it up in an hour or so. Still have 1,000 names here. As I mentioned, we won't get to them all. I guess we can just maybe pick a name or two here each, Chris, to close out the show, add up all the rest of the names that were mentioned in this and reply to our tweet that we feel good or bad about. I'll start here with Shane Boss. I think it's appropriate. He was mentioned once here as a reply and being called back up to make his debut on, like, when you listen to this on Friday. Wednesday. I'm all thrown off here. It'll be so tomorrow when you listen to this on Thursday, making his debut after missing all of last year. And he's been pitching pretty well. ERA under 2 over his last several starts. Walk rate's jumped up a little bit again, shaking off the rust after missing the entire year. I'm not overly concerned about it. He made massive improvements with the strike throwing and commands back in, I want to say it was 2021 at this point, hard to remember. But he had a really good year. Like, you look at back in 2021 where he had that breakout year in the minor leagues, his like K-minus walk rate was right up there with Grayson Rodriguez and Yuri Perez. That's the level of talent we're talking about here. Like, everything breaks right. Everything clicks. He stays durable and hits his ceiling. The ceiling is a top 10 pitcher for fantasy. And that's really what we're talking about here. He's still striking out a ton of guys. We saw that in the major leagues. Yeah, he's only been, let's see, how many innings did he have with Tampa Bay? 40 and a third, so a very small sample size. And that came in 2021 and 2022. But we saw that. We've seen glimpses of what he can do. He's a guy that can pop them. I've seen him hit 100 firsthand with his fastball. Look at what the velo was. It was 97 in 2021, 96 in 2022. Slider, curve, changeup can all miss bats, especially the two breaking balls, two very good breaking balls. So like the pieces are there for him to be a very good arm. They're going to baby him this year, obviously, bring him back slow. I wouldn't expect a ton of innings this year, but I think if he can get through this year and then the offseason healthy, maybe they take the training wheels off, so to speak, next year. And I still think there's a really good pitcher here. Still only 25 years old, too. Shane Boss, I think, is a really good dynasty buy right now. How about you, Chris? What's a name here from the list that you feel positively or negatively about right now?
Yeah, so a couple prospects. Like, got some questions about Jairo Iriarte, yep, who has been up and down this year, but the stuff remains, and the strike throwing's actually improved with Iriarte. So I look at that profile, and I think that there's a lot of upside in this 22-year-old arm. It's a big fastball. It's a really good slider. There's stuff for days here, and I know there's been issues with walks, which is, you know, concerning. But he's got an 8 walk outing on the record this year, and he still has a 10% walk rate. So I think that's pretty notable. He has made improvements, which I love to see. His strike rate is above league average. I think you see a bounce back here. I'm buying Iriarte if I have the opportunity to do. I think Vinny P is a good case study on this list. Like, Vinny P has been really interesting. I think he's one of the better buys in Dynasty right now, because the performance has been not so great overall. Yeah, he's hit 10 home runs so far, but his 246 average is a 319 OBP, which isn't great. But I do think that there's much better days ahead for Vinny Pasquantino. Contact skills are elite, some of the best in baseball. The strikeout rate is extremely low. He's hitting the ball hard, very good average EV. His hard hit rate's really good too. And I think that we're ultimately going to see things level out for him. He doesn't hit the ball on the ground all that much. I'd expect batting averages to come back for him, because he's always been a really high contact type hitter. And he might hit 20 home runs. I think people were really down on him. Kauffman's a tough place to hit too, which doesn't help at all. Your home game's there in Kansas City. So I think Vinny P is one of the guys that I'm looking at and saying, all right, like, I'm buying all day long if I can, because I look at the underlying skills and say, I see a lot to like here with Vinny P. There's a lot of Vinny P fans out there, so maybe it doesn't shock anybody, but I do think there's people that are pretty down on them right now.
Yeah, I think that's the general consensus that there. I don't think people are out on Vinny P, but yeah, I definitely think the buzz has definitely cooled a good amount on Vinny P. And I'm still a very big Vinny P guy. Definitely echo basically everything you just said there. So I would definitely be looking to buy him as well. I think this will wrap us up here. Again, a lot of other names on the list, and a few I want to mention just real quick. Guys that are mentioned in that reply to that tweet multiple times. Julio Rodriguez, we just talked about him recently. So go, if you, I forget what episode it was, but if you want to go back and check that out. We've talked Corbin Carroll recently, and we've talked like Chase DeLauder recently. So we didn't talk about those guys, even though they're mentioned twice, just because we talked about them recently. But thank you to everybody that replied. That was a huge response. We'll definitely do one of these again fairly soon. Maybe more of like a prospect focused one soon, because yeah, there's a lot of replies and there's always going to be polarizing and difficult players to rank and value and figure out what the heck to do with them. That's always going to be a thing in baseball, especially these days. So we'll definitely do one of these again pretty soon. Thank you to all the listeners for tuning in again. We hope you enjoyed this, and make sure you check out all of our personal stuff over at thedashdigo.com, toolshedfantasy.com, and of course over at Rotoballer. We will see you again on Monday, but until then, everyone take care.
Save big on your next painting project at Menards. Pristine Exterior is Dutch Boy's most durable exterior paint. With its Rain Rinse technology, rain naturally washes away dirt and grime. Plus, it resists cracking and peeling, making it perfect to withstand the harshest weather conditions. Save big money on Pristine Exterior paint and start your painting project today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week. Save big money at Menards.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're grinding out bicep curls, or muscling the couch across the living room, crushing morning miles, or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, Smoothie King has fuel to help you maximize your workouts, own your recovery, and elevate your game. Give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs with a lineup of delicious smoothies made to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.